Hello everyone, this is Tatum, and I'm going to finish our lecture on endocrine. I will primarily talk about our parathyroid glands and what it means to have hypo or hyperparathyroidism. So what I would suggest is getting out your comparison chart that talks about hypoparathyroidism and hyperparathyroidism. And on the back of that comparison chart, I think there's also a few pictures that I have drawn that actually depict what our parathyroid glands do. So with that, if you want to look at those pictures and my poor drawings, I'm really sorry, but it really does give you a good visualization as to where our parathyroid glands are located. So with that, our parathyroid glands are really embedded into our thyroid tissue. So on that first drawing that I gave you, you'll see the trachea right in the middle, and then you'll see our thyroid tissue that kind of looks like a butterfly, kind of on each side of the trachea. And then those black dots there in the middle of that tissue are our parathyroid glands. And so our parathyroid glands are actually very important because they help regulate our calcium levels in our body. And they secrete one hormone, which is our parathyroid hormone. So if our calcium levels fall, our parathyroid hormone is secreted, and it helps our body increase the absorption of calcium in our intestines. It also transfers calcium from our bones to our blood, so it essentially demineralizes our bones. So if you think about it, it takes calcium out of our bones and puts it back into our bloodstream. So you can only imagine how brittle and frail those bones can get over time if they have high levels of parathyroid hormone secretion. And then there's also a purpose that it causes the kidneys to conserve calcium. So that is the purpose of our parathyroid hormone. And the last little bullet point on that sheet states that calcium retention by the kidney is balanced by phosphate loss. So calcium and phosphate really counteract each other. So if there is a high phosphate level, we have a low calcium level, and vice versa. If we have a high calcium level, then we will have a low phosphate level. So kind of get that ingrained into your mind as well. So let's begin, and let's just talk about hypoparathyroidism. So if you look at your comparison chart, that's where I will begin. Let's just talk about what it means to have hypoparathyroidism. Recall that a normal calcium level is anywhere from 8.5 to 10.2 milligrams per deciliter. So hypoparathyroidism means that there are low calcium levels. And a lot of times this condition is pretty rare. It can occur really during surgery. So if you think about maybe, let's say, a thyroidectomy. If a patient is undergoing a thyroidectomy, there is a chance that those parathyroid glands could either be injured or removed during surgery. And what is interesting about our parathyroid glands is that they're very, very sensitive to any type of manipulation. So what I had found just with my surgery, even with a thyroidectomy, they try to conserve our parathyroid glands if at all possible. They don't like to remove them because our parathyroid glands are so important for calcium, just for calcium levels in our body. So if a patient does undergo a thyroidectomy, there is a chance that those parathyroid glands could become injured. Maybe they'd have to remove a couple of the parathyroid glands if they thought that they were malignant. So those are the things that we have to talk about when we think about surgery. So what happens if we remove one of those parathyroid glands or a couple of those parathyroid glands, then we're not going to have enough PTH secreted. And so you'll see lower levels of PTH in the body. And in turn, you're going to see low levels of calcium. So with low levels of calcium, we always have to think about the term tetany. Tetany, recall, is muscle twitching. And so there are two things that we can use to actually assess for tetany. And one is called the Kvasteck sign, as well as the Trousseau's sign. The Kvasteck sign is actually when you tap on the facial nerve on the cheek, and that facial nerve will start to twitch. So that is a positive sign for tetany. And the Trousseau sign is when you pump a blood pressure cuff up above the patient's systolic blood pressure level and keep it in place for 1 to 2 minutes. And what you will see would be carpopedal spasms of the fingers and the wrists. And those two signs are both positive for tetany. We do worry about tetany because tetany can cause laryngeal spasms in our airway and compromise our breathing. So it's really important to monitor for signs and symptoms of this. And if you kind of follow under collaborative care, patients that have hypoparathyroidism, we really should be monitoring their vital signs frequently, making sure that we have emergency equipment set up in the room, like a trach set, oxygen, making sure we have suction hooked up, as well as calcium gluconate at the bedside. Calcium gluconate is going to increase calcium levels in emergent conditions. So if the patient is having a hard time breathing due to laryngospasms, we can give that calcium gluconate right away. Also too, that patient is at high risk for seizures. And so it's important to initiate seizure precautions. So make sure you have padded side rails. And again, you have emergency equipment at that bedside. Patients that do have hypoparathyroidism may need, obviously, a high calcium diet, as well as a high diet and with vitamin D, because we know that vitamin D helps absorb calcium in our intestines. And it's really important to lower those phosphate levels. So a medication to help do that is called Renagel, and that is used to help decrease those higher phosphate levels in the body. We could give IV parathyroid hormone, and that is something that the doctor may administer for these patients just to really help treat that calcium level. Sometimes rebreathing may partially alleviate any neuromuscular twitches like tetany and cramps. So rebreathing may be into maybe a bag of some sort can actually help with that. Yeah, so after my surgery, after I had a thyroidectomy, my calcium levels dropped substantially. Probably not so low that it was an emergent condition, but it was something that they were monitoring very, very closely. So when they removed my cancer, they took 2 lymph nodes or 3 lymph nodes from the area, and they actually had to dissect one of my parathyroid glands. And the goal was to always keep the parathyroid glands, but they did have to dissect through one of the parathyroid glands. And so my calcium levels did drop. And I noticed that later in the night, my feet felt really tingly, and I was having just muscle twitching in my face. And so the doctors actually assessed the Kvasteck sign on me, and it was positive. And so they ordered some calcium supplements just to help me get by for the next couple hours. And then over time, those parathyroid glands started kind of waking up from surgery and then started secreting more PTH. So my calcium levels did increase. I also went home on calcium supplements for 2 weeks just because those parathyroid glands, like I said, are very, very sensitive, and they do take a little while just to wake up and function with the normal parameters. And so some patients that do have surgery, they may actually be on calcium supplements for a specific period of time. So that is what hypoparathyroidism is. In contrast, hyperparathyroidism is just the exact opposite. So we have way too much circulating PTH on board. So if you go back to my drawing, you'll see a drawing that depicts what hyperparathyroidism is. And a lot of times hyperparathyroidism is caused by a tumor, also known as an adenoma, on a parathyroid gland. It can also be caused by vitamin D deficiencies, Even chronic renal failure can cause hyperparathyroidism. So here you can see a very large parathyroid gland, and that is a tumor. Sorry, my drawing is pretty poor, I know, but it at least gives you an idea. So what happens is this tumor causes that parathyroid gland to secrete way too much PTH. And this can lead to excessive amounts of calcium in our blood. So what you'll see is, if you recall, one of the functions of PTH is to take calcium from our bone and put it back into our bloodstream. So here's my picture of a bone, and you will see that calcium is being pulled out of that bone. And again, leading to high amounts of calcium in our blood. And this causes bone demineralization over time. So these patients are at high risk just for bone weakness, brittle bones, osteoporosis over time. Also, we have very high blood or serum calcium levels. And so these patients are at huge risk for kidney stones. It's really, really important for these patients to stay hydrated, make sure that they're drinking enough, anywhere from 3 to 4 liters of fluid a day, just to make sure that their system is well flushed out and that kidney stones can be prevented. So big thing, again, assessing for urinary calculi or kidney stones. One of the main signs and symptoms of hyperparathyroidism is bone pain. Bone pain, just because calcium is being pulled out of the bone. And so these patients are going to experience a lot of bone pain. They can also experience depression, forgetfulness, confusion, just because our mental functioning is altered. Nausea and vomiting, anorexia, constipation, and weight loss are all other signs and symptoms. So if you look at the manifestations and labs on your comparison chart under hyperparathyroidism, you'll see that the patient's total serum calcium level is greater than 11, and that phosphate level is less than 2.5, and you'll see high levels of PTH circulating in the blood. It's really important to assess bone density measurements. Again, these patients are at high risk for brittle bones. Also, too, under the collaborative care, as you do your assessment, be watching for any bone deformities, fractures as well. Make sure that we are assessing different electrolytes in the body, monitoring cardiovascular status, and just kidney function, again, because of the risk for kidney stone formation. It's important to administer IV normal saline as well as a loop diuretic to help lower calcium levels. Hopefully that normal saline will help dilute calcium levels in our serum, and that Lasix will help us pull that excess calcium off so we can diurese. We may have to supplement phosphate unless there's a risk for further calcifications in the body. A medication, or actually a hormone called calcitonin, may also be given for these patients. This calcitonin will help stop or decrease that bone demineralization. And it also helps stop the reabsorption of calcium in our GI tract. So calcitonin is another hormone that kind of helps regulate our calcium levels. And we can give calcitonin to these patients because it will help stop that bone demineralization and just help stop with that calcium retention. Biophosphonates like Fosamax, Boniva are going to be given. These are going to be given to help make the bone stronger. And patients may be on a low calcium diet as well. It's really important to have that patient move around. We want to try to avoid immobility. As we move around, it's going to make those bones stronger. So that is something that really has to be stressed and taught to the patient. Some patients may undergo a parathyroidectomy. So if they have a calcium level greater than 12, they may have surgery to remove some of those parathyroid glands. So they may remove one or more, depending on I guess really depending on the cause and how extensive that calcium level is. It's important to monitor electrolytes. The goal is to decrease calcium levels with medications to as near normal levels as possible. And really, post-op period is really the kind of the same type of principle after a thyroidectomy. So neck support is really important. Really assess talking after surgery, just because anytime we do surgery on the parathyroid glands or even on the thyroid gland, there is a chance that our vocal cords could become paralyzed to a certain extent. So it's really important to assess for talking, make sure that they can talk and speak. So all of those things are important to include in your collaborative care treatment. I really want you guys to kind of be thinking about tetany when it comes to hypoparathyroidism. And I really want you guys to be thinking about hyperparathyroidism in regards to just brittle bones, fractured bones, and just what high serum calcium levels mean. We know that patient is at high risk for kidney stones. So I might highlight those on your notes and just look that over before your exam. Anyway, I know that the last part of lecture today was probably very fast. So if you guys have questions about diabetes insipidus or SIADH, please let me know. I'd be more than happy to help you. It's really important to kind of pull out the main concepts for these two types of things as well. Really just kind of be looking at the labs there. So with SIADH, we know that hyponatremia is kind of a red flag. And then with diabetes insipidus, we know that these patients are diuresing large and large amounts of fluid. These patients are really confused and lethargic. We worry about just the cells shrinking because of the fluid shifts in the brain. So all of those things are things to go back and revisit before your test. Anyway, again, please let me know if you have questions, and I hope this was helpful. All right, thank you. Have a good night.